If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
With real estate, what I realized is there's nothing happening in terms of from an investor's perspective. And then all of a sudden you got a deal and it's like, we got to close in 45 to 60 days. And so from our perspective, if we haven't talked to an investor for a year, then they might as well not even know who we are, right? They may well have never met us.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
DJ Scruggs has owned and operated multiple businesses. Prior to investing in real estate full-time, DJ founded, co-founded, or was an early employee for 8 companies in the software and digital media industries. He has successfully filled many roles in business, including raising capital, marketing, sales, operations, and software development. Also, DJ is a technology junkie and presents strategies for leveraging technology for real estate investing. DJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Excited to learn more about what you're about and toot my own horn a little bit.
Oh, please do. No. This show's about you. So, you know, same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Give our listeners a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
So I was actually way back in college, I was a music major, and I was a classic liberal arts student, like got out of college and had no idea what to do. I realized from a music perspective, I did not have the talent or more importantly, the drive. You know, I was surrounded by people who are now playing for major symphony orchestras and, you know, touring the country with bands. And I realized I don't have that skill or that just dedication. And so it took me a while to kind of figure out a few things. One is that I was good with computers. And the other was that I liked small business. I had started reading Inc. magazine, the Wall Street Journal, and I just kind of had a feel for it. And so I started a tech company. This was when I was in Chicago. This was back in the late 90s. And without going into all the details, I ended up selling it to a company in Boulder, Colorado. And so that brought me out to Colorado. And then I just sort of kept doing that. I either founded or co-founded or worked with early stage companies. And, you know, as the bio says, I just wore a lot of different hats. But the good thing is I just got a well-rounded understanding of everything in business, you know, whether it's sales, marketing, accounting, certainly tech. I wrote a lot of code. But the one thing I also learned is with tech is kind of a young man's game or a young woman's game in the sense that, as you know, as you've seen, it just changes. It's constantly changing. There's always something new. And so it's hard to keep up with that. You know, it's hard to see around the corner. You know, people look at a company like Uber today and, you know, the next Uber is going to look nothing like Uber. And it's going to be on a technology that you and I probably haven't even heard of yet.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of just sort of having to see around the corner and place a big bet, right? Because for every Uber, there's 100 more that fail. So I just got kind of burned out on that process because it's a lot of work. There's a lot of risk. And even when you're successful, it's not like you've got it set. I mean, as successful as Google is, I would hate to be running Google. I mean, because all day, every day, they're confronting different threats. You know, their best employees are getting poached by Facebook and vice versa. So it's no matter how successful you are, you always have to be a bit paranoid. So I was starting to look around for something else, a career change. And as it happened, my neighbor was a real estate agent. And it turned out he was friends with one of the guys who founded Bigger Pockets. And so he said, yeah, you should go check out that website. And I did. And I started reading it and really liked it. And just the more I got into it, the more I realized, wow, I had the mistaken assumption that real estate is just buy a property and wait, you know, find your 20-25% down, just do that over and over. And it just seemed really boring to me. But I realized, no, there's so many creative ways to engage with real estate. So I started out flipping houses, but I knew right away, even before I started doing that, that I wanted to do multifamily because being a tech guy, I liked businesses at scale really well. And I also like working with other people. A lot of house flippers I know are really successful all by themselves. I mean, they have contractors and things, but but they really are kind of a one-man show, and I don't really like doing that. I like working with a team to solve problems together. So that's what really led me to multifamily.
Gotcha. And is multifamily what you guys exclusively invest in now?
Yes, that's all we do. I'm actually at one of our properties right now. I was telling you before the show, I had to fire our property manager. So that comes with the territory, but I still love it. It sucked to have to fire someone, but I'm excited at all the work I'm doing here to get it prepped for the next property manager.
Right, right. So what size of properties are you guys finding as your sweet spot for buying then?
Well, it depends on the market, but we'll look at anything over 80 doors, up to 300. We did not buy much really at all this past year because of COVID. We actually had to back out of a transaction at the last minute last April because the business plan just didn't make sense anymore. You know, we were going in with the idea of a roaring economy and we're just going to make some improvements and raise rents. And then overnight unemployment was 10%, you know? And so we just, I couldn't in good conscience tell our investors, yep, we're still going to be able to do this exact plan, you know? And it was painful. I mean, we lost some money, a lot of money on that, but I still sleep well at night because we did the right thing for our investors. But at that point, you know, until we got this vaccine and there's more optimism, I mean, I was settling in for 2 or 3 years of just really painful economy. Mm-hmm. It looks like that's not going to be the case and things are going to start turning around pretty dramatically this year. So we're just now going back out and making offers.
Gotcha. That's interesting. So what year did you really begin investing in real estate then?
As something like I was serious about 2017, I had rented out a place I owned before when I was in Boulder, just to get a sense of what it's like to be a landlord. But 2017 is when I really said, okay, this is what I'm going to focus on and really went whole cloth into it.
That's awesome. So what are some of the strategies that you employed in that scaling process?
Lots of technology. The big aha I had is when we closed our first deal. My partner, Adam, is really extroverted and knows a lot of people. So on the one hand, I thought raising the money would be easy because he just knows so many people, right?
Right.
But it proved to be really hard and it wasn't very much money. And what I realized is coming from the tech world, I'd raised money in that world before, but it's very infrequent, right? So you raise some money, you get the company going, you get it to a certain level, then you go out and raise some more. And then, you know, if everything goes well, you do that 3 or 4 times and you go public or you get acquired. With real estate, what I realized is there's nothing happening in terms of from an investor's perspective. And then all of a sudden you got a deal and it's like, we got to close in 45 to 60 days, right? So from our perspective, if we haven't talked to an investor for a year, then they might as well not even know who we are, right? They may well have never met us.
Sure.
So we changed our whole orientation around doing regular communications, a lot of it automated through emails and things like that, doing frequent webinars. You know, Adam does a lot on social media to just stay in front of them and remind them that we're still here, we're still doing deals, and keep watching your inbox because we're going to send something to you someday.
Right. And it's keeping those leads warm and nurturing those that allow people to, when a deal comes across their desk that makes sense for them, they're like, oh, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I've heard from DJ regularly. And even if they're, you know, who is it? I'm drawing a blank. The Business Made Simple, Donald Miller. You know, he mm-hmm. says even if they're getting your email and deleting it, they still mm-hmm. see your name that you sent them something. So, you know, even, you know, and I track all read rates and things like that through ActiveCampaign, you know, what's your open rate, but your open rate doesn't still tell you who still just saw your name and said, oh yeah, these people are regularly communicating. Cause there's a lot of, you know, mass communications I delete, but there's still people that I, you know, when the right email comes, I'll know and I'll probably open it and say, okay, yeah, that's something I'm interested in. So that's really cool. So you guys, you said you made the comment that you guys use lots of tech, you know, regular communications, webinars, emails, things like that. Is there anything unusual that you guys have been able to deploy that's specific to you?
Well, I would say, so you mentioned ActiveCampaign, which we use a lot. The thing that we use that I think most people don't is a platform called Zapier. Mm-hmm. And what Zapier does is allows you to connect different applications together, right? So normally, if you're using Zoom for a webinar, what happens is you put up the registration page, people go register, And then if you want to get them into your database, you download it and then you upload it and, you know, in a CSV file. And with Zapier, you can make all that real time. So as soon as they register, Zapier basically serves like a conduit between applications. So as soon as they register, they're immediately punched into ActiveCampaign. And if I want, I can do all kinds of things from that. So we can build complex automations around that. So, you know, we can send a welcome email. We could, if they registered for a certain type of webinar, we can segment them based on that. We can do campaigns around those segments. So there's that. Another thing we use is we use the automation to drive qualification. So we get you on the list as an investor. But then what we do is we want to get some kind of engagement. So what we do is we send a form. Well, it's a link to a form. And we use a platform called SurveyGizmo. Actually, they just changed their name to something weird. I can't remember. But the only reason I use them is because I was one of the partners there early on. So I know it really well. There's sure. tons of different form apps out there that you sure. can use besides SurveyGizmo. But what we do is the questions we ask look a lot like the questions you'll see on a subscription agreement for a syndication, right? So they ask you about your income, you know, do you qualify as accredited or not? And then we'll ask a few other questions like, you know, what do they prioritize? Are they more about total return, cash flow, you know, protecting the principal? And we also ask them their birthday. And I have a VA who sends out birthday cards to these people every week using a website called sendoutcards.com. And so, you know, that's a really great way because, first of all, with that form, I just keep nagging them. I have an automation that waits every 3 days. If they haven't filled it out, we just send it to them again. Reminder, fill out your investor profile form. We just keep sending it to them. And we're also sending them other things too. But after they fill out that form, the next thing is it presents a link to schedule time with me. And we use Calendly for that. So thanks for filling out the form. The next step, I don't just say if you want to. I say the next step is to schedule a call with us, and they click that and schedule it. And so it's a really stress-free way to talk to a lot of investors, right? That's just going 24/7. Every now and then I get an email that says that someone scheduled time on my calendar, and I just pop on and do a 15-minute call to learn more about them and answer their questions and just build some kind of a rapport with them. And that circles back to when I said we started realizing we have to communicate regularly. And so we sort of mapped out this whole process of qualifying them and getting them to talk to us on the phone. And that's worked really well.
That's awesome. One, that you've gotten that done. That's, a lot of people aspire to that, but having the patience to build, because those automations and things, they take time to integrate and they take time to some real focused, just some real focus on what the flow should be like for an investor as they move through that system. And then as you test it, you go, oh, wait, there's a break over here. You know, this is where they dropped off, and you got to go back and rebuild. Yep. And so, you know, hats off to you for getting that done, because the rest of us who are deal junkies, you know, are out here just like, oh my gosh, deal. And then we go, oh crud, we got to find a way to communicate with our investors as an afterthought. But it sounds right. like you've really built this at the front of your, the front of your business is your investor communication side.
It is. I mean, in this business, you're always starved for two things, deals and money. Right. You're always looking for both of those. And I won't say that we've got the deals part completely figured out, but I feel really good about the money part. You know, we do a really good job of cultivating that list.
How have you used your technology stack in the deal side of things?
So we use a platform called Syndication Pro for communicating with once an investor has invested in a deal. We also, like when we finally announce a deal, we send out an email and it's a nice teaser email about how awesome this deal is. You're going to want to learn more. Click this button. That takes them to a form that has some high-level information about it, about the deal, where it is, what we like about it. And then you have to register for that to get it, to download the full deal packet.
Sure. Right?
And so we drive them to that. And then from there, we do at least two, often three or four webinars about it. So we step them through, okay, great, you got the deal packet. Next, you're going to want to register for the webinar. And then we also send them emails that are specific to the deal. So we break it up into pieces. We'll send an email that's just about the property. You know, like, what do you need to know? How many units is it? What's good about its location? What's not so good that we're going to fix or improve? And then we do one that's about the market in general, like why we like this market. Then we do one about the financials. And I found, I mean, a lot of our investors, and I imagine a lot of your listeners encounter this too, a lot of investors have not done a lot of real estate investing. That's partly because just the audience we reach through Adam's podcast and the events we do are geared a little bit more toward newer investors. So you really have to handhold them and explain these concepts and not use jargon like reversion cap rate and things like that, or IRR. A lot of people don't understand IRR. And so, you know, what hit me was when I was doing one of our webinars and someone asked, and you know, it said the return is going to be 8% a year. And then at the end, you'll get, I don't know, 40-something% in capital gains. And they said, so if I invest $100,000, how much money will I get each year? And I just went, well, duh, 8%, right? But people don't necessarily think, oh, that means $8,000. So we add a table that shows the first year you're going to get this much, the next year you're going to get this much, and so on, just to really spell it out exactly what they should expect.
Right. Yeah. That's sometimes, and you know, maybe that person just wasn't thinking, because I think, you know, the rest of us probably, you know, 8% of 100,000 would be $8,000. But yeah, doing stuff like that is absolutely helpful. That's interesting. Anything else that you guys use on the in the tech stack on the deal side of things?
Well, we're shifting over, but we still use, I guess, but we're moving over something called Trello, which is Trello. It's we did that for, because you know, you'll look at 100 deals and you know maybe get one or two under contract, and so we have a column for each stage of the deal process. So incoming is a brand new opportunity, then it has to be underwritten, and so that's the next column. Once underwriting is done, we craft the LOI. Once that's done, we may have a revision to it based on feedback from the seller, and then either it gets accepted or rejected. So that way we have a sense of what does our pipeline look like for deals. We're moving over to a platform called Sorted, which is spelled S-O-R-T-D. Which is similar to Trello, and in many ways, it's not as good in many ways. It's a little less mature, but what I love about it is it integrates directly with Gmail. So when you get an email, you can just drag it over and boom, it's a card. And you can do all your communications from within Gmail. I found the hardest thing is just getting people to switch from one browser tab to another browser tab, right?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. You think that'd be easy, but it's really easy just to, you know, email someone and said, what does that thing say again? And then they reply, you have to go to this card in Trello to find it. So putting it all inside email makes a big difference.
Right. No, that's super cool. That's super cool. What are some things? Well, maybe I asked this already, and if I did, forgive me. What is your number of doors under ownership today?
We're at 300 now, a little over 300. And we would have almost doubled it with that one deal we backed out of last year, but still stuck at 300 for the moment.
No, that's great. I mean, that's absolutely admirable. So at 300 doors, I guess, what are some things maybe, and you started in 2017, which I had 300 written down. So here I am. It's late in the afternoon recording this. I apologize. But if, you know, what are some things maybe you would have done differently that could have sped up your growth process?
Well, boy, I mean, the investor thing was a big part of it, communicating with them better. I think we were too conservative in our underwriting in this. We went through a training program, which a lot of people have done. And not that I don't think you should be conservative in your underwriting, but I think we were looking for a unicorn when there were just no unicorns to be had, you know? And so you had to think a little bit more about, well, what are some other ways we can add value to this as opposed to something they taught you that worked 10 years ago?
Right.
So that, and then I think, you know, Adam has a podcast that's really popular now, but it was like pulling teeth to get him started. And, you know, I kept telling him, we got to start a podcast. And he just kept blowing it off until finally we did. So I wish we'd started that really even before, you know, we were even making offers. I wish we'd started doing that. The other thing I should say that we did do, this is part of what made me want to partner with Adam, is he'd started a meetup group and that got to be really popular. And so that's how he built a list of people who knew him, but we didn't have any organized communication structure with them. So doing the meetup was, I think, pretty key to kind of building our initial audience.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. DJ, you've been an open book here today, and I appreciate that about the different technology stacks that you guys are using and the way that you guys are both communicating internally on the deal side as well as on the investor side. So I certainly appreciate that. Let's jump here into the final four if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Start. I mean, it's really, I learned this from starting my first company. You could sit around and think about it and make plans and talk to people about it. But instead of saying, I'm trying to start a company with someone, say, I've started a company. Mm-hmm. And just start thinking of yourself as the CEO. And, you know, they say fake it till you make it. I think that's largely true. I mean, before I started my first company, I was just a lowly programmer hanging out with other lowly programmers. Suddenly, I was meeting with vice presidents and CEOs after I did that. So it's that mindset, you know, and what got me to thinking that way is I'd read this article. This is back in the mid-90s about how great companies got started, you know, like Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, Motorola. Those are the three I remember. None of those ended up building what they became famous for. Right. Initially, they just said, we want to start a company. Let's just do something to start a company. And, you know, that getting that initial momentum going is just so important.
Right. Right. No, I love that. I love that. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I've been taking an online course. It's called Zero to Dangerous. It's from a company called the Flow Research Collective. If anyone's ever heard of the concept of flow in psychology, flow is the when you're working on something, or it doesn't have to be work, it could be play too, but you're doing something where time just disappears. You know, you look up and holy cow, I've been doing this for 4 hours. Where'd the time go? Right. And sometimes it's work. Sometimes it's just video games, you know, or scrolling social media. But their whole concept is to engineer that, you know, so that you can sort of reliably get into that state, because that's when you're your most productive.
Sure.
by 10x from anything you do. And so I've been doing that course and applying a lot of that. That's really helped me a lot.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'll have to look that up. I'll have to look that up, because in this age of Twitter focus, it's you know, it's hard to achieve that. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
You know, I like to do it directly. And they say you shouldn't, but I do it anyway. I give money to homeless people. You know, in Denver, we, like a lot of big cities, we have a homelessness problem there.
Right.
So I have no problem giving $5 to someone. One thing I did one Christmas that was a lot of fun was I bought off Amazon. You can buy these boxes of cashew nuts in little packages, like 4 ounces each. And so I took those and stapled a $5 bill and a little Santa Claus sticker and put them on those. And I would hand those out whenever I saw someone. And it always brightened their day. You know, it's like I'm giving them a little bit of money, but I'm also giving them some food. And I like to do that. And then I give to different charities. My big issues are animals and mental health are the two big things I focus on.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. I love the creativity there. DJ, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Best way is just to send me an email, dj@realbluespruce.com. That's real like real estate, blue like the color, and spruce like the tree. You can go to our website too. I am on Facebook, but I don't use it that much. I've kind of come to think that it's bad for the world. so I've dialed back my usage of it. You can find me there too, though, and message me if you want. But, you know, I like email, and I'm happy to, you know, with all the emails we send out, it always has my address as the from address, and people reply, and I'm happy to chat with anyone. So that's the best way to get in touch.
That's awesome. DJ, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.